Okay. Now, here's what you have to read for homework. Read 2 Chronicles 22 to 26. That should cover the material, or that should cover the historical background for Joel. Joel is an early prophet. He is in the time of Joash. That'll get you up and around 850 B.C. Right after Apollyon. Maybe he's even there during the reign of Apollyon. I don't know. But the reason that it looks like he's in the reign of Josiah is that he doesn't, in the book of Joel, there's no mention of a king in Israel. And for a time, Josiah, even though he's the king, he is not running the show. He starts out at the age of 7. And it's the priest, Jehoiada. Anybody remember? Jehoiada? Look in 2 Chronicles 22. Or no, it'll be about 24 or 25, wherever Joash begins to reign. There's a priest that actually guides the country, and Joash pretty much yields to that man's wisdom. Jehoiada the priest. And all through the book of Joel, it's the priests that are mentioned. The priests get right. That the priests are called. There's never reference to the ruler. As if at this particular time there's no king in Israel. So there's a good chance that because of that, Joel prophesied during the reign of Josiah and not earlier during Athaliah. But just to be sure, he's in there somewhere. Just read the whole context for next week. Okay. Let's hear that one. The theme of the book is the day of the Lord. And as far as I'm concerned, that's how we're going to interpret it. Almost all the material is prophetic, dealing with the day of the Lord. And I say, well, I go to church every Lord's Day. That's good. That's to be a good, faithful Christian. I wish everybody would. The only problem is, nowhere in the Bible does God call Sunday the Lord's Day. Now, the day of rest is a picture of the day of the Lord. But Sunday is not the Lord's day. Now, I realize we use that term, that terminology. Last isn't Sunday. Sunday's the first day of the week. It would be Saturday if there's any day of the Lord. That's the seventh day. But the whole book looks like the first part of it, you're dealing with aspects of the tribulation. The second part, beginning in chapter 2, verse 1, is the second advent. Army of the Lord coming back, the conversion of Israel is involved, the judgment of the nation, the blessing of Israel. I'm going to deal as if I'm going to interpret the book literally as if it applies to the second coming. I'm going to tell you why. From the very beginning, you can't apply it to history, and it never happened. When it starts talking about the palm worm and the canker worm and the locust eating up the whole land, it ain't never happened. But it ain't going to happen in the future. See, immediately Schofield and Gabelline, they immediately want to apply the first, this guy did too, he wants to apply the first chapter to a history and say that in history we have a picture of what's going to happen in the second coming. The only problem is, nowhere in history did the things take place that talked about with the pestilence there in chapter 1. Now you have the same thing on your chart, so you shouldn't need me to. I've crossed out some things because after studying through the book, this guy just hadn't got it all together. But the day of the Lord is the theme of the book. I don't worry about keywords or the key phrase of the day of the Lord. Chapter 1, verse 15. Chapter 2, verse 1, 2:11, 2:31, 3:14, and then an implication of the day of the Lord, 3:18. And on your chart, you have all those, so don't worry about writing them down. All I've done is he's tried to make the first chapter the present at the time that Joel's written, and it can't be because it never happened. And then he tries to make 2:11 something imminent, some army that's in the near future, and that can't be. It's the second coming. That's why I've crossed those out. And then, finally, he says the day of the Lord. No, the whole thing's the day of the Lord. Now, that one. Let me give you some verses now. I made up a chart. I have a bad habit. You ever work on stuff, and you come to class, you leave it? Oh, man.
Murphy's Law.
Okay, isn't that nice? Color. I have the NBC Peacock. Well, anyway, he gets just good ears again. The expression, the day of the Lord. You're going to find it in these passages. And you write these down as quickly as you can. Because I'm definitely going to ask you to give them back to me on a test. I'm going to ask you to prove to me that the day of the Lord includes, or I'm going to say, give me verses to show that the day of the Lord refers to the millennial day. It also refers to events of the second coming. And it also overlaps into the tribulation, which comes right ahead of the day of the Lord. And those are the verses that show you that. Yes, ma'am?
Do you let people know when you give them the test?
Yes, it's probably an open book test.
Okay.
But you'll have to have some idea of where you're going to be. You won't have enough time to finish the test. But the day of the Lord has a reference to the tribulation. There were some of the things that are mentioned in Isaiah 13, 4-11 and Joel 3, 9-16 are tribulation truths that take place right before the second advent and lead you right into the second advent. Okay. I probably should have had copies of that run off so you'd have it. I'll tell you what we'll do. At the end of the period, I'll put it up there again. Well, I'll just leave it down there and I'll give you some more information on it. Joel has three chapters, 73 verses, and 2,034 words. We have some technical data. It's written somewhere in the area of... Boy, I tell you, it's really, really hard. 885 could be as early as 885, could be as late as 800. That's why I said there's no real way to pin it down in there, because no specific king or person is mentioned. If it's in the reign of Athaliah, it's early, 885, along in there. If it's as late as Joash, it's down closer to the turn of the century. 885 to 800, somewhere in that area. No big deal. But he is early. The message is negative, except for Israel's restoration. There are 13 other Joels in the Bible. Now, the information on the fact that the priests seem to be the ruling class, you'll find in 1:13 and 2:17. As he mentions in both places, the priest repented. Doesn't say anything about the king or monarch, but it's the priest. And, of course, during the reign of Josiah, the leader of the country was a priest.
What are those references?
In the book of Joel.
To what?
It mentions the priest in the book and never mentions a king. As if the nation of Israel is being dominated by the priesthood at this point and not by the Davidic line. This is a Judean prophet, by the way. It's a Judean prophet. The prophet to Judah. Okay. Chapter 1, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to Joel, the son of Pethuel. The word Joel means Jehovah is God. The word Joel means Jehovah is God. You see the El, Elohim, all that's reference to God, Adonai. Jehovah is Lord. Jehovah is God. Yah. El. That's what you got. It's, I fact, it's what he saw in the Hebrew. It almost be like a tetragram of a set. This thing here. You see, the word for God in the Old Testament is unpronounceable. You cannot pronounce it. There's no vowels in it. Now, what the Hebrews did, they weren't allowed to pronounce it, but for somebody to pronounce it, they took this word, Adonai, they took this word, Adonai, and they, here it is, J O A I, made it an E. And that's where they came up with the vowel. That's where they came up with the vowels for Jehovah. And where there's no vowels in the tetragrammaton, the word denoting God. So what the Jew did was they took another expression for the Lord, Adonai, and took the vowels out of there and placed them in between the consonants to come up with the word Jehovah. That's how it all came about. They added the vowel points. There are no vowel points in the Hebrew for Yahweh. Yahweh, that's the way some of them pronounce it. But Joel means Jehovah's God, and his father, Pethuel, however you want to pronounce it, Pethuel, wherever you want to put the emphasis. It means sincerity of God. Pethuel means sincerity of God or godly simplicity. Godly simplicity. The word of the Lord came to Joel, the son of Pethuel. Hear this, ye old men, and give ear, all ye inhabitants of the land. Hath this... Now look at this. The reason... They say 115 is the... What do they call it sometimes? The outstanding verse? The key verse? Yeah, it is. Alas, the day of the Lord is at hand. The whole book's about the day of the Lord. But really, the key verse is verse 2. If you understand verse 2, then the whole book is placed in its proper place. Hear this, ye old men. I mean, somebody's been around for a long time. I'm going to take this off here, fellas, and out, folks. I don't want to discriminate against the ladies. Probably got enough things against me already if I'm doing that. I'll put it back up at the end of the session. If there's something in here that'll help you to see what the book is about, it's this. He said, hear this, ye old men, and give ear, all ye inhabitants of the land, Israel. Hath this, what he's getting ready to talk about, hath this been in your days or even in the days of your fathers? The answer is no. What he's getting ready to describe was not in the days preceding Joel. It wasn't in the days of Joel. And it hasn't been in the days since Joel. Once you get that, you're right where Joel fit. Turn to Matthew 24. Notice a key verse there that Jesus Christ mentions in characterizing or describing the second advent of the tribulation preceding the second advent. Notice he says there in Matthew chapter 24, after the Antichrist moves into the temple, verse 15, and in the tribulation, he says, verse 21, for then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And Joel, what his wording is very close to it, he said, hath this been in your days, or even in the days of your father? Tell ye your children of it, and let your children tell their children, and their children another generation. He said, one day it will come to pass, and it hasn't yet. It hasn't yet. Now, in verse 3, he says, tell your children of it, and let your children tell their children, and their children another generation. Write down Psalm 78. Psalm 78. The whole psalm of Psalm 78 is a parable. As a parable which teaches the things that have been, it is that which shall be. Ecclesiastes 1:7. Psalm 78, God goes through the whole psalm, and it's a history, a detailed history up until the time of the Psalms of Israel. And you know what he says? Look at Psalm 78. Give ear, O my people, to my law, and incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth, Psalm 78, 2, in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. So he said, let your children tell the children, let your children tell other children on down the way. We shall not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and the strength of his wonderful works that he had done. For he hath established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, what he did in the past, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which shall be born, who shall rise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn. You know what he's saying? He's saying, learn from the past, because that's what the future is going to be like. And that's what the whole psalm is. Learn from the past, because that's, in other words, Solomon said, the thing that hath been is that that shall be. Ecclesiastes 1:7. And there is no new thing under the sun. Ecclesiastes 1:7. In other words, if you want to study the future, study the past. You want to know what the tribulation is going to be like? Go back and study Exodus. The plagues that God brought upon Pharaoh are typical of the plagues that are going to come during the tribulation. You want to see what the second coming is going to be like? Study Joshua. Joshua is a picture of God, of Joshua. That's the Old Testament name for Jesus. Yahushua. Jehovah delivers. Jehovah saves. That is the Jesus of the Old Testament. Joshua brings the people into the land and takes over and establishes them. And that's what Jesus is going to do in the second coming. So if you want to study the future, study the past. Y'all people say, well, the Old Testament's a dead book. You're crazy or a bedbug? Is a bedbug crazy? Why folks say that? Huh? Someone. All right. So Psalm 78 is a parable of the thing that teaches you, the thing that hath been shall be. Verse 4. Now, what you're about to read, there is no record of this plague anywhere in the Old Testament that it ever happened. That which, now this is the thing he said, hear ye this. Hath this been in your days? It hadn't been. And it wasn't in the days of Joel nor since. That which the palmer worm, I'm not going to go, if you want to look these things up in the dictionary, you're welcome to do it. Now, a lot of the scholars and a lot of the commentators think that the palmer worm, the locust, and the cankerworm and the caterpillar are all four forms of the same bug. You know, just phases. What do they call them? Metamorphosis. You know, the thing changing on them. A moth into a butterfly or whatever they do, you know, something changing something. And this is supposed to be some sort of a bug that goes from one phase to another phase until it develops into the final phase. That don't really matter. That which the palmer worm hath left, hath the locust eaten. And that which the locust hath left, hath the canker worm eaten. And that which the canker worm hath left, hath the caterpillar eaten. In other words, pestilence, eating everything in sight. I almost had to laugh and rejoice. Boy, Houston got it again there the other day. Did any of you hear on the radio about the grasshopper plague that hit downtown Houston? Yeah. Just the other day, I could not believe it. I was listening to radio Sunday night after church. Literally, hundreds of thousands of grasshoppers descended upon all those skyscrapers in downtown Houston. I couldn't think of a better place for it to happen. Amen. It really did, just like right out of the Bible. But it's the locust, it's the grasshopper plague, and they were just having a fit of that. And that is the sign of things to come. Turn to Matthew 24. Notice, I'm going to give you the verses on the future plagues dealing with the tribulation. Matthew 24. 24-7. Matthew 24:7, in the context of the signs of the tribulation to come and the advent, he says, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places." Revelation 6, in the tribulation, you have the seals opened up, and the first seal is broken. You have the Antichrist come forward, and then war comes forward, and then famine. Notice he says in Revelation 6:5, "And when he opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, 'Come and see,' and I beheld a black horse. He that sat on him had a pair of balances, like scales in his hand. And I heard a voice say, in the midst of the four beasts, 'A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. See thou hurt not the oil and the wine.'" Somewhere, the wheat and the barley is mentioned. Yeah, here it is. Look at Joel 1:11. "Be ye ashamed, O ye husbandmen, how ye vine dressers, for the wheat and for the barley." How? Because of the lack of them. "Because the harvest of the field is perished." And Revelation 6:5, one of the characteristics of the second coming is there'll be very little wheat, very little barley. There'll be just a small bit measured after each individual. Rational. Okay, now, you want to see the locusts that will be coming in the tribulation, literally, that eat up the land? Revelation 9:1-8. Revelation 9:1-8. The bottomless pit opens up, and out come some wild things that ride on horses or have tarred horses and have some locust things. And notice here in verse 6, Joel 1:6, "For a nation," this is a description of what, well, let's just read down to them. He said the palmworm's going to eat, well, you don't eat the locust, and then the cankerworm, and then the caterpillar will eat. "Awake ye drunkards and weep and howl." This is God speaking to a nation that is reaping judgment. "Awake ye drunkards." And Israel was in trouble because of this business. Write down Isaiah 20:1-4. Ephraim was said to be a drunkard. And Israel's land being stripped was predicted in Deuteronomy 28:38-40. Deuteronomy 28:38-40. Where it talks about everything being taken here in verse 4 and verse 5. It was predicted in Deuteronomy 28:38-40. That's chapter 28, verses 38-40. "Awake ye drunkards, weep and howl." Now those are important verses. Weep and howl are important words in the verse. "All ye drinkers of wine." Because of the new wine. They won't even have new wine. New wine is all that can be a problem. And of course, new wine is right out of the grape. Isaiah 65:8. I've given you that before. "For it is cut off from your mouth." Notice he says drinkers of wine, and drunkards, and even says new wine. Write down Hosea 4:11. When he talks about Ephraim, the drunkards, he tells them that even wine and new wine and whoredom take away the heart. There's even a problem with grape juice in excess. Hosea 4:11. There again is that condemnation against Hosea, or the condemnation of Hosea against Ephraim, the drunkards, according to Isaiah 28:1-4. Then a little bit of an explanation when he talks about the palm worm and the worms and all that business, and the nation being and the, everything being cut off. "For a nation is come upon my land strong and without number, whose teeth are the teeth of a lion." You know what it says back there in Revelation chapter 9 about those locusts? There they got lion's teeth there. That ain't the half of it. Revelation 13:2 says, "The beast has the mouth of a what? Lion." And he leads a nation against Israel. He comes up, the book of Daniel says, with a small people, small country. Okay? I'm sorry to hear you.
Is there a country that represents that one?
England. believe. Yeah. In the recent history of England, I don't know what it would be in the Old Testament. Could be Greece, Persia, Rome, Babylon. One of those. Just about everything that you got before Christ, there'll be a type of it since Christ. In other words, I tell you what you. Verse 6, for a nation has come upon my land, Israel, strong without number. Boy, I tell you what, back to Revelation chapter 9, it says, he opened the bottomless pit, there arose a smoke, and there came out locusts, as scorpions of the earth have power, they've given certain power. And when it numbers them, it says there are 200,000. Yeah, and the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000. It's 2 million. Do you realize 2 million with 2 million soldiers would look like coming upon the small land of Egypt? Looks pretty rough. Or the small land of Israel looks pretty bad. 200,000. Wait a minute. Let me say it again. It's not 200 million. 200,000. That is 200 million. That would be a bunch of that's a crap, though. You ain't going to get them into Astrodome. For a nation. Okay, go on. Yes, now. Yeah, wait. He. Look at this. Isn't this. Notice in verse 6. Verse 6, the number of the Antichrist. We're going to see all kinds of weird things in Joel because all of it's dealing with the second coming. So I'm going to, as I go through what I can give you, you know, what pops in. For a nation has come up upon my land strong without number, whose teeth are the teeth of the lion and he. Notice the nation connected with a he. It's Revelation 13, 2. It's the Antichrist. It's the devil himself. He is as a roaring lion in 1 Peter chapter 5. Direct reference to Satan and a satanic nation. And that's what comes up out of the bottomless pit. In Revelation chapter 9. And notice, he, verse 7, hath laid my vine waste and bark my fig tree. I know, you know, that because we've got such a lousy mixed up language, we don't understand good English. But that doesn't mean somebody barked at his fig tree. That means he debarked it. He took the bark off. He laid my vine waste. Well, they say that out in the world. He wasted it. And he barked my fig tree. Yet made it clean, bare, and cast it away. The branches thereof were made white. All right, let me give you some passages here. Notice he said, my land in verse 6, which is Israel. And then he says here, he laid my vine waste and barked my fig tree. Now, obviously, that happened little. And will happen little at the second coming. Where the fig tree and the vine tree will be completely wiped out in the fans of the pestilence and all the takeaways and drift. But there's a spiritual reference to this. Israel is said to be a vine and a fig, and likened to the fig tree in a number of places. The vine, Psalm 80, verse 8, and Jeremiah 2:21. There, Israel is likened to the vine or the vine tree. And he said, he, the Antichrist, had laid my vine waste, which will literally take place in the second coming. Also, a fig tree, Matthew 24:32. And again, Jeremiah 24:2. Gotta hurry. We're really getting along good because we're going to have to cover a lot of ground in Joel. It's about 70 verses to get by in 4 hours. And that's not easy to do. He hath laid my vine waste. Talking about the Antichrist in verse 6. If you want to even see it more on the nation connected with a man, you remember reading in Daniel how that a horn stood for a kingdom and also a king? In other words, the two things under the same symbol. And there, it was as if the king was connected, the king is a representation of his nation. And so he's using that analogy here in verse 6. And of course, the Antichrist is going to be the representation of a satanic kingdom, a satanic nation, eventually the whole world. He had laid my vine waste and barked my fig tree. He had made it clean bare and cast it away. Boy, he's going to decimate Israel during the tribulation. The branches they're ever made white. I mean, he's going to strip it of every valuable thing that he can get. Paragraph mark. Verse 8. Another important word. Lament. Now, I'm going to emphasize these words. How?
That all of that would have taken place within a matter of years. When you get the book of Matthew. Now, I don't want to confuse you. Let's go on now. Lament like a virgin girded with sackcloth for the husband of her youth. In other words, he's saying to Israel, act like a virgin who's lost the husband that she was going to have in her youth. They had planned to get married and prepared to get married, and then the husband died in some fashion, and then that virgin lamented. And I guess, that could be, an earth-shattering experience for a young girl who's prepared to marry a young man and spend her whole part of her young womanhood preparing for this marriage. And to a Jew, that was one of the most important events in their life. And to have that all fall through was just a soul-shattering experience. Well, I guarantee what will fall through on the Jew in the tribulation will be a soul-shattering experience. Lament like a virgin. Well, here again now, we not only have Israel likened to a vine and fig tree, but Israel likened to a virgin. Lament like a virgin, and the passages that deal with this, Israel is referred to as the virgin daughter of Zion, Isaiah 62, 5-12. I think that's the passage. And also, when we study through the Song of Solomon, the Song of Solomon. But the virgin, when you find that expression, the virgin daughter of Zion, that expression refers to trib Jews. In Matthew 25, you have the parable of the 10 virgins. Five are prepared, five weren't. Something about that Jew in the tribulation, that she's a virgin daughter of Zion. I'll tell you what it is. I'm going to try to explain this so I don't confuse you. In the Old Testament, God married Israel. Israel was God's wife. But what happened? Israel messed up. And if you study the prophets, God wrote her a bill of divorcement. God divorced her. I believe it's in Hosea. It is? Okay, write down Hosea 2:14 to 23. It's in there somewhere. But what you got is that woman that God married has committed fornication, whoredom with the nations of the world ever since then, and with the kingdoms of this world. And one day, out of that woman, God's going to bring through a remnant. He'll purge out from that original woman a remnant. In the tribulation, he'll purge him. Turn to Zechariah. Be Zechariah 13. Zechariah 13. That it? Yeah, 13:8. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off, two-thirds, and die. But the third shall be left therein. I will bring the third part through the fire. We'll refine them as silver is refined. We'll try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them, and I will say it is my people, and they shall say the Lord is my God. Second coming. Verse 1, chapter 14, behold, the day of the Lord coming. See that? All right, out of that original woman that he married and divorced, God's going to bring out of that woman, after he purges them, a small remnant. And that small remnant in the tribulation that will be preserved in the tribulation and be purified is that virgin daughter. It's what is brought forth from the old woman that rejected. All that was good of her is just the few that get through there in the tribulation. You understand what I'm saying? And then he marries that virgin daughter at the second coming. That is his restored wife. And that's in Hosea. And it'll also be in Isaiah 54, 1-10. Isaiah 54:1-10. And Hosea, what did I give you? 2:14-23. God put off Israel in the Old Testament, and then eventually He will bring out a purified remnant who He calls the virgin daughter. There'll be, I'll tell you what it is. You get over there in Revelation, it says about those 144,000, they never defiled themselves with man. They were never defiled by men. They were perfect, just like God wanted them. And that from that remnant of the tribulation, God finds him a wife and a bride in the nation of Israel.
I was reading through Jeremiah before, I kept noticing this statement, and it's in Jeremiah 31. It says, "O Virgin of Israel, O Virgin of Israel." Is that any connection to that?
Got to be. It'll probably refer to that.
Before say that Israel was never referred to as virgin single. Did you say that?
Yeah, I said that. Must have been wrong. Well, when we went through Song of Solomon, usually she's referred to as virgins, plural. But there are passages on this virgin daughter. And it's not the church, because it always says the virgin daughter of Zion.
In Jeremiah 31:15, there's that verse in 15 that says, "I heard a voice in Ramoth, Lamanth."
Yeah, it ought to be connected with that, won't it?
Rachel weeping for her children.
Yeah, see that? Can we connect with that second coming? Well, Israel might be a virgin. The only time she's going to be a virgin is going to be in the tribulation. It has nothing to do with the church. Nothing to do with the church. The church is a chaste virgin that has no connection with the daughter of Zion. You see the difference? Is anybody confused? Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Well, the father would be married to Israel and the son would be married to the church. Now, how they do it, you have to ask them when we get there. I don't know how. But that seems to be the scheme, yes? Yeah, that seems to be the scheme. I don't know who the Holy Spirit gets. I just don't know. I don't know. Okay, let's go on. Now, there'll be a way to do it. There'll be a way to do it. I don't know how it'll be done, but he'll do it somehow. Okay. Verse 9, the meat offering and the drink offering is cut off of the house of the Lord, the priests, the Lord's ministers, mourn. Again, see that? Weep, lament, howl, mourn. Another. Now, why is the meat offering and the drink offering cut off? Well, everything has been wiped out. You know what the meat offering and the drink offering were? The people were to bring the tithes in and their offerings into the temple, and some of those offerings were to be given to the priests to eat. Well, when the people don't have anything to bring in, guess what the priests are doing? They're howling. They're lamenting. They're mourning. Because the meat offering, what they would get to eat. Now write down Leviticus 2:1-3. It'll show you this. Leviticus 2:1-3 and Exodus 29:31-33. If I can read my writing. Exodus 29:31-33. If any of you run these references down and don't pan out, let me know and I'll try to go back over it and see what I was trying to write when I wrote what I didn't write. I'll tell you what. It looks like Exodus 29. I need bifocals. I'm getting blind, getting old. Hate to admit it, you know. Keep wanting to, you know. Hate to admit that you need bifocals. My dad says he wears those bifocals and he can't play golf. Because he looks down, the ball comes up. And, you know, you can't only hit that thing with a bifocal. Can't have that. Okay. priests get their food from the offerings. But you know there's something else in that. The meat offering and the drink offering is cut off. Does that the offerings being cut off from the house of the Lord, what does that sound like?
Middle of the week.
Right. It'll be the Antichrist cuts off all the offerings in Daniel 8 and Daniel 9:27 and it'll be Daniel 8, I got it written down here, 11. He cuts off all the offerings in the middle of the tribulation. Not only is it because of the lack of food and all that, but the Antichrist himself cuts it off. Verse 10, the field is wasted, the land mourneth. Boy, not only is that's a reference, not necessarily the land itself, but the people in the land. The corn is wasted, the new wine is dried up, the oil languisheth. Notice that, the oil. You go right back there in Revelation chapter 6 and it talks about the oil. And the next verse, the wheat and the barley. Hurt not the oil. The whole thing has reference to the tribulation. Famine is coming. Matthew 24. He said there'd be famines, pestilences, earthquakes in divers places. You know what a lot of countries use the corn and the wine for? What do they use the corn and the grape juice for? Booze. Well, that'll bring it on. You go right back here to verse 5. Awake, ye drunkards. And America today, man, I mean, the grain, that's where a lot of the grain goes. That's where the barley goes. Where the barley goes.
In Hosea chapter 2, it says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." It was initially tied to the Levitical priesthood.
Right, and when it started going to Baal in the Old Testament.
Baal, it's in the context of the spiritual fornication of Hosea.
Okay, so who will it go to in the tribulation? I bet in type it'll go to the one they make the covenant with.
It's also, by the way, one of the symbolic payments of the Son of God, 411.
Is that right? Okay, let's go on. Verse 11. Got to get those Masons in there. They're always in there. Well, they're in there, man. There's no doubt about that. That original priesthood is right on through there with them. "Be ye ashamed, O ye husbandmen." How? Here it is again. This is the farmers now. "O ye vine dressers, for the wheat and for the barley, because the harvest of the field is perished." And it's because of these bugs and these locusts and all that business. There's never any case in record where it ever took place like that in Israel in history, but it will in the future. The verse 12, "The vine is dried up and the fig tree languisheth. The pomegranate tree, the palm tree also, and the apple tree, even all the trees of the field are withered, because joy is withered away from the sons of men." Turn to Isaiah 62. They have no joy, but notice that one day God's going to give them joy. At the second coming, Isaiah 61, notice verse 2, "to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees." And that's something. Did we just get through talking about some trees? "He barked my vine and my fig tree." It also said that business in Zechariah too. Let me give you one more thing about the four bugs there in verse 4. Maybe you could give a message on the four bugs that bug me. Amen. Those bugs may, I don't know for sure, and I gave you this in Zechariah, they may symbolize four Gentile powers that literally eat up Israel, both preceding the first coming and preceding the second coming. The four that eat up Israel preceding the first would be Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome. And eventually Rome finishes. What Nebuchadnezzar didn't get, Persians got. And what the Persians didn't get, the Greeks got. And what the Greeks didn't get, Rome finally wound up with. And they wound up with a whole shooting match by 70 AD. But at the second coming, you probably find there'll be four nations that will eat up Israel. And if they're the same four nations of Dan, see now they're Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome are the four beasts in Daniel 2. They end up in the Antichrist system. Then there are four more beasts in Daniel chapter 7. The problem with Daniel chapter 7 is they don't match the four beasts in 2, so you might as well just forget trying to match them. The four beasts in Daniel chapter 7 come after Nebuchadnezzar and are said to be in the night visions. The church age is referred to as the night time in Mark 13 and 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Those four nations are the four things that come up there. Those four... Let me turn to it here real quick. In Daniel 7, the four beasts that come up out of the sea are said to be... It's said to be a vision by night. And in the night visions, verse 7, and these are kingdoms that come up after Nebuchadnezzar and after Media-Persia, because they're given at a time both of those kingdoms are in existence. Where is it? Yeah, verse 17, Daniel 7:17. These great beasts which are four kings which shall, future, rise out of the earth. So it cannot be Babylon, it cannot be Media Persia, because both of those are kingdoms at this time. But chances are those four right there will have some connection with four great world powers at the time of the tribulation. The first one was a lion, England. The second one was a bear. Who am the bear? Russia. Russia gets wiped out in Ezekiel 38 and 39. And after this I behold another like a leopard. No, it wouldn't be Ethiopia. That's Russia. That's under the Russian. It may be the United States. A leopard is an integrated animal. And America is one of the most integrated countries in the world. Yeah, the black spots, the yellow, and the white belly. All three races on one animal. That's all. And then comes the Antichrist. And this one guy, he's got the fourth beast there. He divides them into two. He says the Arab nations are in there, and then they're wiped out, and the Antichrist come up. I don't know. It's too complicated for me. Let's go on to going back to Joel. Boy, prophecy, man. I mean, it's... Huh? Well, it doesn't describe it. It just said, I saw, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong. You see, they had great iron teeth, devoured, breaking pieces. It's not really described in Daniel 7. Maybe it's undescribable. Well, if it's not, it's what comes from it. He said the fourth beast break in pieces, stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse in the beast and there that were before it, and had 10 horns. And then he said, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them a little horn. And that turns out to be the Antichrist himself. So out of that thing comes the Antichrist. Okay. A lot of connections here. Back to verse 12. Because joy is withered away from the sons of men. Boy, I tell you what. That's what the world... There is no joy. No peace. Now, was it the first coming? There may have been some measures down through time, but things are getting so bad. Terrorism is on such a rise. There's so many problems around the world now. There's no joy. People just got to drug and drink themselves into stupors to find any kind of a relief. Gird yourselves, verse 13, with sackcloth, and lament again. Notice over and over again the admonitions to howl, to weep, to lament, to mourn. Gird yourselves and lament, ye priests, howl, ye ministers of the altar. That'd be the priesthood. This is going to bring forth some real repentance. Lie all night in sackcloth. God demand. Now, what you see in verse 13 and 14 are prerequisites for Israel getting right with God in the tribulation. And the same thing is repeated in chapter 2, verse 16 and 17. It will be what Israel has to do to bring the second coming of Jesus Christ. This is what will precede the second coming and the deliverance of Israel. God is not going to deliver them until finally the leaders repent of their wickedness, their ungodliness, and proclaim a fast. That's a real fast. He says, gird yourselves, lament, ye priests, howl, ye ministers of the altar, come lie all night in sackcloth, ye ministers of my God, for because of the meat offering and the drink offering is withholden from the house of your God. Again, Daniel 8, 11, 9, 27, that's what the Antichrist does. He stops those feasts. Write down these expressions, and I've already given you a couple of them, dealing with howling, weeping, and mourning, James 5, 7 to 10. James, and these are connected with these expressions, James 5, 7 to 10, Isaiah 61, 3, 61, 2 and 3, and Job 42. Why would I say Job 42? Job is a type of the Jew in the Great Tribulation. Job, the word Job means one persecuted. Now, when you study the book of Job, you can get all this material. Job means one persecuted. Who is Job persecuted by? The devil, directly, like Israel being the tribulation. There are 42 chapters in Job. There are 42 months in the Great Tribulation, identically. Job starts out, he loses everything. When it ends up, he repents and laments and mourns and gets everything back. Resurrection. His children are resurrected at the end, in the 42nd month, just like what will happen to the Jew in the 42nd month of the Great Tribulation, or the last 3.5 years. Yes? He repented in sackcloth and ashes. And what he did there is a picture of what the Jew is going to have to do to finally get God to forgive them and to reestablish them and restore them and regather them and resurrect them as a nation. You got all that. I give you all that. Okay. Verse 14, paragraph mark. Sanctify ye a fast. Call a solemn assembly. A solemn assembly in the Old Testament was a special feast, probably a major feast. The major feasts are listed in Deuteronomy 15, Leviticus 23. I'm sorry, Deuteronomy 16 and Leviticus 23. And in Deuteronomy 15, 16. I'm sorry, Deuteronomy 16, verse 15. He says, 7 days thou shalt keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose. Because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase and in all the works of thine hands, because thou shalt surely rejoice. See there? Joy. That's what they not have. In order to get it, they're going to have to do these things. 3 times a year shall all the males appear before the Lord. That was the 3 separate feasts. At the beginning feast in the first month was Passover, first fruits, and unleavened bread. And then the second feast was Pentecost 50 days later, and the third group of feasts was Passover, trumpets, and atonement. 3 times in a year. Now he says to these Jews, he says, sanctify ye a fast, call a solemn assembly. Well, folks, what feast is connected with the second coming? Tabernacles and trumpets. It's the last set of feasts. And Zechariah chapter 14, we'll study it in Zechariah 14. In Zechariah 14, the memorial feast of the millennium is the Feast of Tabernacles. Because that's when Jesus Christ is going to come back to this earth. And from that point on, every year in the tribulation or in the millennium, all the nations will have to celebrate that feast as a memorial to the second coming or the return of the Messiah and the taking over this earth by God Himself. It'll be a memorial feast. And He's saying, call a solemn feast and have a fast. And of course, they did. They had a feast and a fast during those times. If you want to write down the kind of fast that God demands, it's in Isaiah 58, verses 3 to 7. The only kind of a fast that God will accept is in Isaiah 58, 3 to 7. That'll be the fast that He'll accept in the tribulation. And it's the description of it's there. And if you personally, if you want some personal admonition in this thing, if you want to know what kind of fast the Lord accepts, it's the one mentioned in Isaiah 58, verses 3 to 7. There's a wrong kind of fast, and he mentions that. But there's a right kind of fast, and he mentions that and gives you the details of that kind of a fast. It's called the Lord's. This is the fast of the Lord, or something like that. Joel chapter 1. Sanctify ye a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the elders, there's the leaders, and all the inhabitants of the land into the house of the Lord your God, and cry unto the Lord. Alas, verse 15, For the day of the Lord is at hand. When they begin to cry, then the day of the Lord is at hand. And as a destruction from the Almighty shall it come. It's at hand. Now you want to see something wild? Matthew chapter 3, verse 2, but John the Baptist steps out and says, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He was proclaiming to the Jews at the end of the 60th. When he began to preach, he was in Daniel's 69th week, right in the middle of it. And he and Jesus Christ comes along about 6 months after he begins. And then he dies before Christ finishes out. And when Christ finishes out, he finishes out at the end of the 69th week. When he says the kingdom of heaven is at hand, it's within 10 years of the time that he's preaching, if the Jew accepts everything that God has for them to accept. And so here he says, repent. He said, the day of the Lord is at hand. And when John says the kingdom of heaven is at hand, that shows you that the first coming and the second coming were very close together if everything would have went according to the nation of Israel accepting the Messiah, which they didn't. So because of that, it's put off. Notice Hebrews chapter 1. Do you ever wonder why the writer of Hebrews said this? Notice in Hebrews. God, verse 1, who at sundry times and divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, Old Testament, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son. When Jesus Christ showed up, it was the last days. You were in the 69th week. He's cut off at the end of the 69th week. And then the 70th week begins. And if it would have run out, you were in the last days preceding the second coming and the beginning of the millennium. He spoke to them in the last days. Now, what you have there, since nobody knew anything about the church age, is that the last days precede the crucifixion. In other words, the last days are right in here. He said, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son. Well, the last days would have finished out if the whole thing would have come to pass. But since the Jew rejected, God says, well, we're not going to finish out the last days. We're going to stop them right there. And we're going to stick something in here. And He sticks in there 2 days or 2,000 years. And then later on, that 2,000 years is going to end. Out goes the church. And the last days, Daniel's 70 weeks, are going to finish out. You see that? It was the last days at the first coming, because you're right down to the end of Daniel's 70 weeks of prophecy, and it'll be the last days of the second coming, because you are in Daniel's 70th week, right at the end of it. And what nobody knew about was the 2,000 years or 2 days of prophecy that God was going to put in here, separating the beginning of the last days from the actual culmination, or this period of time sometimes referred to as the end. Sometimes it's called the latter times. Anytime you see expression, the last days, the expression, he that shall endure to the end, the latter times, the latter days, all those expressions are referring to the end of that prophecy of Daniel's 70 weeks in Daniel chapter 9, determined upon Israel before all things would consummate and then Israel would be blessed in the millennium. Alas, for the day of the Lord, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Well, I've given you everything I can give you. We'll stop there. And we'll pick it up next week.